more about, is that loading? Oh, here it is. About megacities. Megacities are cities that have over 10 million people. And there are now, I think, about 20 megacities in the world. And the other point about megacities that I think is important to start out with is that they have unique problems by the sheer dimension of it, but they also belie the received wisdom that we've had after about 200 years of economic development in the West, that cities are the wealth of nations, that cities kind of solve the problems of development, that cities are kind of self-regulating, they kind of just happen, you know, create this this wealth by themselves. The experience we're having in developing countries, this is not true. They are not solving problems. They're actually creating new problems, not by necessity. I don't think there's anything over 10 million people that makes it necessarily a bad or dysfunctional system. There are megacities that function well with special challenges. And Linda's going to be here, longtime New York City public health person you could put in the category of successful megacity. I'm going to talk about a not successful megacity, Karachi, Pakistan. I actually changed the subtitle, Sultanabad, how it got its nala. Nala is an Urdu word for sewer or gutter, and Sultanabad is a poor neighborhood in Karachi. First of all, assalamu alaikum from Karachi. I, as Omar said, am at the Aga Khan University, which is the first private university in the country, founded by His Highness Prince Karim the Aga Khan. And my department was the cornerstone, was the first department, this is way before I got here, Jack Bryant, you may remember, from Almaty Declaration, was the founder of this department some 25 years ago. And it was really the cornerstone of the university with a unique vision for a medical school in South Asia. This is a story about a sewer line, why it wasn't there to begin with, how it got built. And it's a small success story. It's a very small success story. It's a feel-good story. You say, oh, you know, yes, you know, community organizing, it works. It's a small success that highlights the massive and habitual failures in places like Pakistan that are blocked, and community activism that is routinely blocked. We overcame it in this thing, but routinely blocked by neoliberal politics that have dominated the last 30 years of development. Just to say a word about Pakistan, it's now over 170 million in the subcontinent. For those of you who are less familiar although I think these days everybody knows where Pakistan is. Here's Karachi here on the Arabian Sea. Pakistan, sadly, has had 22 changes of government since partition, a country racked by political instability and rapid population growth. Just to say a word about Pakistan, because it was the first Islamic country, and pointing out to you a really fine book by the Gallup Foundation, Who Speaks for Islam? They did a survey of the billion Muslims in the world, and a resounding, clear, international picture emerges about what Muslims think. And Muslims do not condone terrorism. Terrorists are a minority in these countries. They admire the West for their technology and democracy. They seek gender equality. They believe that clerics play a minor role minor role in society. This is not the Islam that we get on CNN, but this is the Islam that I see that I live with in Pakistan. I put down here this picture of this luscious creature whose name is Begum Nawazish Ali on TV. It's a man in drag who is the most popular Pakistani television person in the country. Has a nightly nighttime TV program. It's kind of a cross between Larry King Live and Dane Edna. Serious political interview by this drag queen. This is the face of Pakistan today. It's not what we think about, but not what we perceive in the West. Here's Karachi, 18 million people and growing, rapid population, half of which live below the poverty line. Fourth or fifth largest city in the world, tied with Bombay. Bombay and Karachi are in many ways sister cities, Urdu-speaking, multi-ethnic, and it's arranged into cities, towns, and union councils. There are towns within the city, and then within each city there are union councils. a few colorful pictures. There's a lot to speak about, say about Karachi. It's a fun place, lots of interesting people. And I wanted to add this because most of the story I'm going to tell is a very sad story with lots and lots of problems. A quarter of the household of a city with 18 million people have no piped water into their house. There's no drinkable water in the entire city through a tap. 60% of children living in slums are malnourished. That's more than the countryside. Half of middle-class kids have intestinal parasites. There are annual outbreaks of cholera, annual outbreaks of dengue. There's an endemic malaria in the city. Pakistan now has the dubious distinction of having the largest number of heroin addicts in the world, and half of IV drug users in the city of Karachi are HIV positive. It's also endemic hepatitis C. Maybe 20% of people are hepatitis C infected, primarily due to medical malpractice. They get it from their dentists. It's a pathetic, sad situation. And the sewage problem, which you're going to focus on today, is overwhelmed. Built in 1947 for about 250,000 people, now serving a city of 18 million people. Many sewers are just open drains running through neighborhoods. Oops. I said this already. Air pollution, major problems. Road accident, major problem. Rabid dogs in the street. I mean, you can't even walk down the street. Karachi really reminds me of what I've read about Victorian England before the advent of modern public health. And this is a real tragedy. Over 150 years later, and building a sewage line is a difficult issue. So let me tell you about Sultanabad. Sultanabad is a site of one of the Aga Khan's clinics. We have clinics. My department has clinics in poor neighborhoods that medical students and nursing students go out to get practice. We serve the community, we do research, we do activism in these communities. This is a Kachiyabadi, it means a squatter settlement that started after after partition when millions of people came in from India, and these people settled on what was a garbage dump. And it's now grown to a union council of over 600,000 people living there. Our clinic started there about 10 years ago. And these are clinic-cum-development projects because we have schools, and we have women's empowerment programs, and we have leadership programs, and we have microfinance, and all sorts of development programs around the clinic, a model many of you know about. And in this city of 60,000 people, there's one partially functioning sewer. The place is just filthy. One of the neighbors, and this is the other partner in this story I'm going to tell, is the Habib School. And I'm going to show you a map. Habib School was founded on the English public school model, part of a Shia philanthropic organization. And it's a beautiful place. You see the campus here, right next to this sewer. But unfortunately, because of the sewage generated from the community, the whole community smells, the whole school smells like shit most of the time. Sorry. The people, because there's no way to discharge their sewage, they make holes in the wall of the school to let their sewage drain out into the schoolyard. There are parts of the schoolyard that are totally unusable because there's all, and they, every day, every morning they go out and they kind of patch it up, and every night the people, make another hole so their sewage can run into the schoolyard. This is a long-standing problem that obviously has created tension between this elite school and this poor community. So here's the map. Here's elite Karachi, the downtown area with the five-star hotels and the embassies and all that. And here's a canal. This is a canal that's become an open sewer that empties out into the Arabian Sea. And then here's Sultanabad, this poor neighborhood of 60,000 people, mangrove swamp opening to the sea. And our clinic is here. And this is the problem. There's one sewer line that runs here. It's always blocked. There's a wonderful, funny story. The Prince of Jordan came to visit our clinic and gave some money for microfinance. On the day he arrived, the sewers backed up, and we had to have these special little blocks so he could get to the clinic over the sewer. So the solutions were very few. Along this wall, there used to be a road, and the school encroached on the wall. This all used to be just an open area, and with millions of people coming in, they squatted in here. The school built a wall down the middle of the road, and the community built houses all around it, destroying what was originally a sewage line. So there's no refuge. So the city could have asked all these houses to, you know, break down their houses, which is politically, you know, the, you know, thousands of people would have had to be disrupted here, or the school could have allowed the community to build a sewage line inside their school wall, kind of along the on the inside of the wall. So that was the solution that was on the table when I arrived 3 years ago, and I was went out to see my clinic, and the UC Council Nazim, which means mayor in the local language, came to me and said, would you please help us? Would you come with us to Habib School to talk them into this plan? Hatak is a Pathan, he's 33 years old. He had been a UC Nazim for a year, born and raised in Sultanabad, and he campaigned to be mayor of this little area, saying, I want to build sewers. We've got to build sewers. I mean, anybody who lives there knows that that's a number one issue when you wake up and the air smells like feces every day. He had been to school, he had been to Habib School to try to talk them into this, but, you know, class differences, cultural differences, historical differences, he did not get a warm reception. So he invited me to come along to the next meeting scheduled. We went, we were very politely received by the administration of Habib School, but flatly told no, it was a non-starter. And I said, well, you know, I don't know this community very well. Could we go out and look at like where this sewage line would lay, and you know, maybe we can get a better sense of this. So we went out and took a tour. We took a tour of the beautiful Habib School and this beautiful manicured lawns, and then took a turn into the community inside the wall and saw the nightmare that's an urban slum in Pakistan, including these breaking down houses that where there were 10 people shooting up drugs. And it was very overwhelming, flies and trash and feces. Mr. Bana, who was the CEO of the school, said, you know, he looked at me and said, I really wish my students could get a good lesson by just knowing what's going on the other side of this wall that separates the community. I took this as an opportunity to say, hey, you know, maybe we can work together. I said, why don't we do a community cleanup day and have the kids from your school and the government school in the slum work together and clean up the community? In my mind, thinking that we could warm up relationships. He liked that idea, and it led to a big cleanup day. Now, my staff that's been working in this community has lots of experience doing community organizing, doing these kind of health days, health fairs, marches in the city, along with the health education and survey work and clinical work that we do. So we planned a Sultanabad cleanup day, and we had the school boys of Habib there, the school boys from the government side, lots of community, we had ladies in burqa, political ladies in burqa there. And anyway, we got about 200 people together. We had a beautiful program and committed ourselves to this issue. And then we cleaned up the community. And here's me with the kids in the street. And there's Minaj Hatak, the UC Nazim. There's Minaj. Here's the street. So we cleaned up the community. The community got a lot cleaner. The public health literature on this suggests that these are not sustainable activities. And I knew that going into it. But it was an opportunity to warm relationships between two parties that haven't really talked about a problem that they shared for 30 years. And it ended up with an agreement that the community partnered with the school to build this sewer line. Hatak agreed to put another sewer line in that would require some cutting. Despite numerous delays, political delays, contractual delays, a nightmare of issues, finally, without fanfare, 2 years later, the sewage started running in this sewage line. Now, as a postscript, the second part of the Nala never got built. And it's interesting that the school now is, instead of going every day and trying to close those little holes in the wall where the sewage is draining into the school, they built a little trough. The next thing I'm sure they're going to figure out, oh, we'll put a sewage line and let them dump it into the sewage. So it's kind of resolving themselves. The project came to a standstill because of the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, which is a huge political conflagration. It caused huge amounts of problems that overshadowed these small problems of a sewer in a in a slum. While this was a great success and a lot of fun, it highlights the terrible problem. Over half of the city lives in worse or equally bad conditions as Karachi. And I guess I make the point not too subtly that most of the slums don't have benevolent, rich neighbors to help them. I mean, the Habib Public School is a philanthropic organization whose mandate is to help the poor. So, you know, the fact that we were able to make this happen is not surprising. This is not the usual configuration. So what I'm saying here, our lessons learned, is that self-help activities, I mean, community activities in and of themselves is not going to transform Karachi. Communities can work together to find solutions, we know that, but there are systematic forces that block the action. Without serious policy shifts at the global, national, at the city level, the replication of this sort of dynamic self-improvement within communities is not going to solve the problem. The poor can't solve the problem by themselves. We know this from our work in the United States. Mike Davis, who wrote a really outstanding book, Planet of Slums, and those of you who haven't started this investigation of megacities could look for no better place to start your read than this book. Corrupt Leadership, Institutional Failure, Policies that Emphasize Large-Scale Investment are part of the problem. The Asian Development Bank is spending millions of dollars, actually billions of dollars in Karachi, building sewers. We need them. We need these big sewers. But they're not going to solve these small little level problems at the community level. It's just not going to, it's not going to solve the problem. The other point that Mike Davis makes is the informal sector, lauded by some economists as the solution the solution that we need to work with to solve these problems, also is not going to solve the problems. The informal sector is just the desperatest attempt of poor people to survive. It's not a viable economic entity. Another good thing to read, I think that summarizes the points I'm making very well, is William Easterly's book, White Man's Burden, that tells us why it fails. It's one of the recent books on why it fails. And it fails because it doesn't empower people. It doesn't empower people. So with that, we'll end with a beautiful sunset in Karachi with the world's largest fountain in this megacity. And if you want to learn more about the work at the Aga Khan University, please go to our website. Thanks. Omar tells me there'll be questions at the end.
Thanks very much, Greg. You know, the point of Karachi and the megacities is really brought home by the fact that every time I seem to go to the subcontinent for work, the cities I visit seem to get visibly larger. You know, when the plane comes in, you look at the sprawl and it becomes more massive. And Karachi, the shocking part is now when you fly in and out of Karachi airport, you may have seen it on Greg's first photograph, you see this thin layer of brown right above the city. And it's now always there. It used to only be there in the wintertime, but now it's always there. So it's really quite shocking. Well, thank you very much for that, Dr. Pappas. Our next speaker, and thank you, Linda Landesman has just joined us. Thanks, Linda. Our next speaker is Dr. Omar Rahman, my partial namesake, who is a professor of public health at the Harvard School of Public Health. And somewhat like Greg, he is taking some time away from Boston, from here. He is directing the public health program at the Independent University of Bangladesh, where he's also the pro-vice chancellor. He directs a large project called the Prospective Urban-Rural Epidemiologic Study, PURE. And that's a multi-country study, and he's in charge of the Bangladesh portion of that. Omar is going to talk to us about the impact of rural-urban migration on childhood risk of acute lower respiratory tract infections.
Thank you, Dr.